Know this, I am not against banks or their owners, but I, like you, and as a citizen, I am curious about my topic today. If you Google a gallery of economic villains and heroes, those listed will be different than my heroes of America's banking battles. Nevertheless, it seems to me someone needs to explain the cause of inflation, other than what politicians do or government overspending causes. Ron Paul says, one in a million know the answer. Is it dock workers striking? I heard that the other day by my older brother in Vincennes, Indiana, when I visited recently. Is it product shrinkage? Who asked that? Who said that?
Joe Biden.
Yeah. Is that causing inflation? What causes inflation?
Don't cost you money anymore.
Yeah. With that said, is it all actually much bigger than inflation?
Yes.
Like, could it be that money moguls, while making hordes of money with their central banks, have always wanted their own one world bank, with all 200 plus countries in the world being made to use it? Did global money moguls alter our history by their diabolical deeds?
Of course they did.
If so, what is our future? What is our response? As Christians, we have a moral duty to govern God's experiment. I believe this was God's experiment that was started. Travis, and so do you.
Sure.
So we as Christians have a moral responsibility to be involved, vote, and so forth. But Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, my life's verse, since I had a lot of business troubles in the 1970s, which we're going through today again, it's the same reflection, it's like a mirror. My verses were Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. I did that December 27, 1970. Lean not into your own understandings. If I did that, I told Bill I wouldn't be here today. Because this is a dangerous topic, as I'm going to explain. I think it is. But in all thy ways acknowledge him. That's why I had my grandsons give you these Grateful Heart cards. Because that is my focus to live by, is to share the gospel with everybody. That's the core answer to our country's problems.
Right.
Right? And then, of course, I also like to have God's will in my life, and I like to know how to seek God's will. And grandsons, this is it. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will direct your path. So I don't know my path, but I know in whom I believe, and that's why I'm here today to share with you how my life was changed. Now, we're changed by books we read, people we meet, and TV news we watch. For me, a Bible and Jesus, meeting him, turned my world upside down spiritually. A foreword written for a book by Gary Allen and a 1979 meeting in D.C. with Congressman Larry McDonald turned my political views upside down. And thanks to Bill, I guess it's Bill Hawkins, is that right? Why'd you say Brad? But anyway, Bill Hawkins and George Kaler, I'm here today. These people are changing my life also. I hope I change yours a little bit. One of my heroes in America's banking battles is Congressman and 2012 presidential candidate, Ron Paul.
Love Ron.
In fact, I attended the GOP 2012 National Convention as a Virginia delegate of his, held in Tampa, Florida. They kept me on a bus with other delegates from Virginia so that we couldn't vote on a key issue and rode us all around Tampa. We walked out of that convention when Mitt Romney refused to let Ron Paul speak. In Paul's 2009 book, End the Fed, he writes on page 25, "One only needs to reflect on the dramatic decline in the value of the dollar that has taken place since the Fed was established in 1913. The goods and services you could buy for $1 in 1913 now cost nearly $21. That was in 2009 when he wrote this book. Imagine what the value is now. Another way to look at this is from the purchasing power of the dollar itself. It has fallen to less than 5 cents of its 1913 value. That was in 2009. What can you imagine it is today? Quoting Ron Paul, we might say that the government and its banking cartel have together stolen 95 cents of every dollar as they have pursued a relentlessly inflationary policy. His words, not mine. Ron Paul's figures come from the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. So they are true. They are accurate. He says on page 3 that to understand money, one absolutely must understand what a central bank is all about. The Federal Reserve is America's central bank. Ron Paul said he had sitting on his desk in Washington, D.C., this statement, "Don't steal. The government hates competition." His words, not mine. Looking back in history may be the way we find our way forward. Ron Paul says on page 142, a central bank, by its very nature, is the opposite of a commodity standard of money or a gold standard, being it doesn't require an authority to run it. If a central bank comes into being, he says, when a gold standard is in place, the purpose is to circumvent or eliminate the restrictions that the gold standard places on those who want to enlarge the government over the opposition of the people. He continues, the only government involvement needed for a gold standard to work is to enforce anti-fraud laws and contracts. On page 103, Ron Paul explains that the gold standard worked great for 600 years with the Byzantine Empire's Byzant gold coin, which was accepted all over the known world for trading purposes as the world's most used coin. But in 1071, its gold content per coin was reduced to raise funds to fight a war with the Turks. That war was lost, and so was the currency. Maybe America missed out when we deviated from Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution, which says no state shall make any thing but gold and silver coin to pay bills. Maybe they should have added, and certainly not America as a nation. Ron Paul said as much in his book, End the Fed. Our American colonies used gold and silver, plus paper money called colonial scrip, S-C-R-I-P. It was not backed by gold or silver, and the colonies controlled its purchasing power by how much it issued. This is called orthodox finance. It was considered a revolutionary concept in economics because the European mercantilist system of money required governments to borrow from banks and pay interest. This is known as a debt-based money system, where banknotes are known as bills of debt. It is also called unorthodox finance. Colonial scrip, an orthodox finance system, or bills of credit, credited by the government based on the credit of that government, meant that there was no interest to pay for the introduction of new money. It has been reported that while on a trip to England, Benjamin Franklin was asked by Bank of England officials to explain the prosperity of the colonies. Now, Bank of England was the world's first central bank controlled by stockholders. Franklin said it's simple. In the colonies, we issue our own paper, money, colonial scrip. We issue it in proper proportion to the demands of trade and industry to make product pass easily from producers to consumers. Reference for these comments was given to be Ben Franklin's autobiography, published in America in 1791 and in England in 1793. Ben Franklin died at my age, 84, in 1790. Immediately, King George III made colonial scrip illegal in the colonies and extracted all gold and silver that we had by requiring it to pay his taxes. Franklin continued, in 1 year, prosperity ended and a depression set in. The colonies would gladly borne the little tax on tea, he said, and other matters, had it not been that England took away their money, which caused unemployment and dissatisfaction. The viability of the colonies to get power to issue their own money out of the hands of King George III and the international bankers was the prime reason for the Revolutionary War, Benjamin Franklin. However, the issuance of paper money hit an inflationary snag because of the war with England, and as the war came to an end, on October 19, 1781, it was determined that we needed a central bank to get us out of trouble. But did it? That's the question. It was named the Bank of North America and formed by the Continental Congress on May 26, 1781. It opened for business in Philadelphia January 7, 1782. That currency became worthless. And it became known as not worth a continental D. Now, ever since I got saved in 1907, I've been trying to clean up my potty mouth, so I'll let you figure that out. Googling, it said, a de facto central bank whose shares were held by the public, Philadelphia financier Robert Morse, who had given millions to support the war, was the bank's first superintendent. I might add, how much stock did he own? That CB ended in 1791. The U.S. Constitution was adopted in 1789. Then in 1791, Congress established a second central bank, calling it the First Bank of the U.S. And it was used from 1791 to 1811. However, my research shows that James Madison did not review it in 1811. Now, Ron Paul said it was Jefferson, but mine was that James Madison did not renew it. However, Madison was president from 1809 to 1817, and being our third central bank was chartered in 1816 during his second term, he cannot be one of my heroes in America's banking battle. It took 5 years before the third central bank happened. The Second Bank of the United States was the name of it. It was used from 1816 to 1836. And here's where another of my heroes, Andrew Jackson, ended the Second Bank of the U.S. Now, he's been debased in all ways, as McCarthy has been. Think about why. Think about why these people are being debased. Jefferson was against central banks. What are they saying about his name? So, he removed all government funds from that central bank of the government, they say. It's not the government's. It's an independent bank. But he removed all the funds from it. By 1833, then placing that those funds into state banks, Jackson vetoed a bill to recharter the Second Bank of the United States on July 10, 1832. His second inaugural address ended with these words, and this is why I believe we were founded by Christian men who loved God and loved this country and wanted to free themselves from the tyranny that they had come from. My family came from tyranny, and that's another story. Finally, it is my most fervent prayer, he said, to that almighty being who has kept us in his hands from the infancy of our republic, not our democracy, our republic, to the present day, that he will so overrule all my intentions and actions and inspire the hearts of my fellow citizens that we may be preserved from dangers of all kinds. That's my prayer today. It took 77 years for advocates of a central bank to get another central bank. 77 years. We didn't have a central bank. To find out how we fared without a central bank during those 77 years, I'm now reading a book titled Gross National Product in the United States, 1834 to 1909, by Robert Galman. Back to heroes of my America's banking battles, though. At 4:30 a.m. on April 12, 1861, Confederate troops fired on Fort Sumter in South Carolina's Charleston Harbor. That war caused too much printing of inflationary money, killing off all wartime currencies. Do you notice how wars keep destroying the currency? Ron Paul said, "This set the stage for a gold standard to be established that was solid but not perfect." Paul said on page 20, one flaw of that gold standard was banks were permitted fractional reserves and were beginning to rely on more and more regulations to dampen competition. Ron Paul said that created the dynamic that led to the Federal Reserve Bank. That brings us up to The Creature from Jekyll Island. It is one of the best-selling books ever in its category. G. Edward Griffin tells in detail how this central bank we now have, the Fed, was hatched. This fourth central bank, the Federal Reserve Bank, was chartered on December 23, 1930, by all Democrats present and four Republicans. Does this sound like inflation to you? Let's say Warren deposits $1,000 in his bank. Fee Bank will likely try to make a return on that money by lending it out, some of it, at interest. Jim comes in and asks for an $800 Fee Bank loan. Warren's $1,000 is still there in the bank that he can draw out as long as the bank has deposits where they've kept reserves from other customers. Now, Warren has $1,000 and Jim has $800. There is $1,800 in the economy compared to $1,000 before. Fee Bank created money. The process doesn't end there. Jim can deposit the $800 in another bank, which can lend a portion, say 90%, to another. And on, it'll go until there is new money of, say, $4,000 to $5,000, all out of Warren's $1,000 original deposit. Is this inflation? This system of banking is called fractional reserve banking because banks only keep a fraction of your deposits as reserves. They loan out the rest. If calculations are accurate, just imagine what happens when the federal government deposits trillions into its banks of choice, when it gets new money for their promissory notes held by the Fed. In 2008, The Federal Reserve adopted a new policy, though, that of paying banks interest for the money they keep in reserves. So instead of the bank loaning out Warren's money, the Federal Reserve could offer to pay the bank to keep the money. The higher the interest the fee bank, the Federal Reserve offers to pay the fee bank, the less likely it is to lend it out to you, to me, or a business. Notice, this allows the Federal Reserve to more directly control the interest rate. If the Federal Reserve wants loans to have a 4% interest rate, all they need to do is promise to pay 3.9% IORB to the bank. In that case, a private borrower would have to offer at least 4% to beat the Federal Reserve's rate. Vice versa is true if the Federal Reserve wants banks to lend more of their deposits, thereby creating more money. All they need to do is lower the IORB. And that's exactly what they did during COVID. In January 2020, the interest rate on reserves was 1.55%. By mid-March 2020, the Federal Reserve had dropped the rate to 0.1%. This policy made it relatively more lucrative for banks to increase lending, and they did. That result has been a large increase in the supply of money. Economists measure what counts as money in different ways. One is called M2. From January 2020 to January 2022, the M2 supply increased from 15.4 trillion to 21.6 trillion. That's a 40% increase in the money supply. Unprecedented in recent U.S. history. Couldn't that be inflation? Another of my heroes of America's banking battles is John Fitzgerald Kennedy, JFK. I voted for him in 1961, my first vote.
I was too young.
I was told. My research, at least I think I did, my research says he tried to run a standard silver and gold-backed currency out of the U.S. Treasury to put money into our economy, which could, it seems, compete with the Federal Reserve notes with no interest to pay on debt based, a debt-based system, like the Fed's. This is where we get sticky.
Yeah, he was killed.
Here are a $1 bill and a $5 bill I have with me. The $1 bill is a silver certificate. The $5 bills are marked United States note. About $2 billion, maybe more, was put out by JFK. 4 months and 18 days after his executive order 111110, JFK was assassinated. Was it over money? I don't know.
Robert Kennedy said the CIA did it.
It was on November 22nd, 1963. One day later, Carol threw up her hands and married me. Another hero in banking battles is Bobby Kennedy. I'm talking about the dad of the Bobby Kennedy that's running now, who was assassinated June 5th, 1968, after I heard him say, "I want to finish what my brother started." I'm wondering, what did he mean? Another banking battles hero is Larry P. McDonald.
I knew him.
I did too. His assassination, that's why I'm here today, was on September 1, 1983, by a communist Soviet Union fighter jet that shot a commercial airline flight 007 out of the sky. When you watch the Reagan film, you will see at the end of the film, this commercial airliner takes off. And they say, and two jets go up, communist Soviet Union jets. They're following the U.S. commercial air flight liner. And then they shoot it down. And you see it going into the ocean. And the comment was, and I was sitting there, I was livid, said, and a congressman was on board. He wasn't a congressman. He was the biggest anti-communist, the biggest anti-New World Order money that was ever in our country, maybe, including Andrew Jackson. His name was Lawrence P. McDonald. And right then I decided I'm going to start coming out and talking about my book a little more. My book is A State of Spy Tells All. It tells the story of a Christian meeting an atheist in the park of Julia Davis Park. And they strike up a conversation. And it turns out that the state of spy tells the Christian all that the New World Order has been doing to them and wants to do to them. And so that became an audiobook that my dear friend George Kaler played the state of spy unbelievably for and with. You have at your desk, you have a little slip, and you can go on and listen to two of those programs free. And it's diabolicaldeeds.com. You can also hear the last interview that Larry McDonald did on national television. And I hope you do. I hope you hear what he has to say. So I knew him because I met him in D.C. in 1979. And we talked. And he told me that I would know, this is amazing, I was a Republican, him a Democrat, and he tells me, for whatever reason, you'll know when I'm going to run for president. And he said to me, when you hear nationally announced that I've become the chairman of the John Birch Society, you will know that we are preparing for me to run for president. That happened a short time. I'm sitting in Lynchburg, Virginia at that time, and I heard him interviewed, and I was watching it, and I called my wife in. I said, you see that man right there? That's who I met in 1979. He changed my political views forever. He's not going to live long. And if you hear his interview, you'll know why. At least, maybe. We can't nail it down because there's not enough facts, I guess. But that happened a short time, that interview, before he got on that plane. So I hope you'll look at that and listen to that interview. What is next for us in the world of banking? None seem to know for sure, but we have all heard of the term World Bank. Hands up if you've heard that term. Everybody in the room. All right, well, this is where the words originated. Bretton Woods, GATT, 1941 to 1947. After the Second World War, the United States, the United Kingdom, and other allied nations engaged in negotiations to establish rules for the post-war international economy. You can Google it. The rest was the creation of the International Monetary Fund. The result was the creation of the World Bank. We got our words World Bank at the July 1944 Bretton Woods Conference and signing of the Geneva General Agreement in October of 1947. Please know that this is my research, so you need to do your own research. America's Inflationary Review. In 1963, when this currency was put out in circulation, and I can prove that this is that currency, there was $300 billion, the national debt. Imagine what could have been if that would have gotten out as a parallel currency with the Federal Reserve notes. One, not paying interest, and whatever they do with the Federal Reserve. And I'm not saying the Federal Reserve is bad. I don't know. Maybe if we just could find a way with a new candidate that would become president and get energy out of the ground and create a huge economy, maybe we could spin our way out of this and everybody would be happy. I don't know. But in 1980, our national gross debt had risen to $1 trillion. 29 years later, 2009, when Ron Paul wrote his book, America's gross debt was $12 trillion, he said. 14 years later, in 2023, our gross debt was $34 trillion, and $7 trillion was now in the hands and held by the Fed. I'm thinking that means no one bought $7 trillion of our Treasury bill debt at open market auctions. So the Fed picked them up for us. 2024, interest on America's $36 trillion national debt will be, just interest, will be $1 trillion, which is about one-fourth of all tax revenues collected. Folks, we're entering new waters. We have enormous inflation problems.